listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
With the most, Nikki Kalula. We're going to jump right into this episode. We have a very special guest indeed, all the way from Honolulu, Hawaii, correct?
Yes, sir.
Originally, Mr. Garth Gunderson. How are you, Garth?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm good. I have to first ask you, your parents are either huge Wayne's World fans or you have Scottish or Irish roots that you have a relative from. Tell me how you got the name Garth.
So actually, it's interesting. Neither. My dad is Garth, and so I'm Garth Jr. But and my roots are actually a little bit Irish, but also more so Norwegian.
Wow.
And so yeah, I'm just kind of all over the place, you know, because I'm
Well, it's party on. Rock and roll, yeah, you have to have that in your moniker because everybody knows it's, you know, it's Wayne and Garth, man. Done, bro.
Excellent.
That's right. So you came from Honolulu. Oahu's one of my favorite islands. I was going to say records. Islands. Makapu is one of my favorite beaches. Do you know that island pretty well? Or you were just born there? How long did you stay in Hawaii before you moved?
So I was born there, and I stayed until I was about 6 years old. I grew up on Oahu, obviously, born in Honolulu. Specifically on the island, I grew up between Waikiki and Waipio. Waipio is North Shore.
Yeah.
So I remember quite a bit, you know, like I think one of my favorite spots as a kid was the Polynesian Cultural Center.
Yeah.
And, you know, they would have poi and poi bread and kalua pig, and it was a very, like, you know, cultural experience on the island. So I try to keep Hawaii as, you know, a part of my roots as a person, because, you know, the Hawaiians have a way of going about life and, you know, just kind of keeping it real and keeping it chill, you know.
Also, what I love about it's like there's a spirituality to connection to water and earth, and also just like life and just being kind. And one of the things I love is like Hawaiians are very, like, especially ancient Hawaiians, they never wasted, you know. It's just like everything, like using the coconut to its core and then finding a way to, like, you know, utilize every part of the coconut. And I just love that because it's like it's such a tribal thing to do that, whereas, you know, in commercial societies there's like people just waste and we just use and it's just like discard. And we don't think about how important it is for Mother Earth. And like how, like, that's the one thing I really love about like ancient Hawaiian culture is like people are just very spiritual.
Resourceful.
Resourceful, spiritual about the land, honor of the ocean. It's all of these, like, you know, like Ohana kind of vibes. Where it's at, you know. And it's, and I'm a big bodyboarder, and I surf a little bit, but I'm more of a bodyboarder, and it's like I just love the ocean. So whenever I go to Hawaii, it's like you just get that vibe, and it's like this should be something that's universal, but it's not, and it's here so prevalent. So I'm sure growing up there, even up to six, you had to have that kind of like a spiritual experience as a kid, just kind of like seeing how people, like, have reverence for the land and the sea and community and all of that. How did that influence your life in a positive way?
I think, you know, even now, like, for example, to make an exhibit A example of it, even now, like, currently me and my girlfriend, we don't buy plastic bags or like grocery bags, like right. plastic grocery bags. We actually just reuse and recycle like paper bags from like Whole Foods or Trader yep. Joe's. And you know, those grocery stores. And beyond that, you know, for me, like, I think I'm so thankful to have come into this world and, you know, have been born into a place such as Hawaii, because it's instilled in me a lot of like, you know, core values of just like, especially like family and, you yeah. know, friends and, you know, obviously, yeah, Ohana, you know, taking care of your neighbor and so forth, and just kind of instilling like these core values of like just being a good person yeah. and being kind. And more importantly, you don't do it out of like hoping that somebody's going to do something for you back. It's just like,
yeah,
it's just spreading that love, you know, yeah. spreading that love and that care. And I think, you know, a lot of that is like what the world needs right now.
Yes.
But my childhood, you know, seems so far away, you know, and it's, you know, into this modern world, you know, we're living in it, you know, and I'm still young, you know, I just turned 28. And to me, my childhood feels so far away
right.
from a lot of those things that I experienced, you know, growing up in Hawaii. And also it's just such an influx of culture there. There's a lot of Asian culture and a lot of, you know, Koreans and Japanese and Chinese and all sorts of people from all over the world, you know, there. And it was just like very fascinating growing up and just being around all these people from everywhere, you know. And it's kind of just taught me, I'm just a people person. I don't care where you come from. I don't care what you look like, what you got, what you don't got. Like, I'm just going to talk to you. You know, I'm going to treat you just as like I would treat anyone else, you know? So.
Well, I love that. And then your family moved. Where did they move to from Hawaii?
So actually, my parents are Navy, so that's the big reason why we were there. They were stationed in Hawaii, and then we actually had a short stint in San Diego while we were waiting for all of our stuff to move over. In Hawaii, we call California and the rest of the states the mainland. So right. we were waiting to move over to the mainland, and so I had a couple months in San Diego, and then. Once everything got over, we drove across to Jacksonville, Florida, where my parents got restationed. But it was actually between Jacksonville, Florida and Japan.
Wow. Like
between Jacksonville, Florida and Okinawa. And I chose Japan because I just thought that'd be so cool. But I was outnumbered by my siblings. So but once we got to San Diego, we drove across, and I turned 7 years old in Phoenix, Arizona, at my aunt's place. Or my grandma's place. And I spent most of my life in Jacksonville, Florida.
That's amazing. And how did you get into music? Were your siblings into playing guitar or drums, or were they in bands, or was it your dad that kind of got you into music as well? How did you get into that?
To be honest, you know, I never really considered, you know, to do music or be a musician, but as a kid, I just loved art, and I loved, like, my first, like, love was drawing, really. Like, I started as, you know, drawing, and then, like, I was naturally inclined towards that, and then, like, painting later in life. And then around, like, when I got into high school, my girlfriend broke up with me, and my mom saw how sad I was, and she actually got me a ukulele, because it's, like, ukulele, like, you know, Hawaiian, and...
Ukulele,
of course, right? It's ukulele, not ukulele. But nobody in my family really was a musician, except my grandma, who I love dearly, and she actually played piano and guitar, and she sang.
Wow!
And so, and she was, you know, she stayed in Hawaii until the end, essentially, you know, she's. To me, and she helped raise me and my siblings. So, like, I think to my deepest root of music, it comes from her.
Right.
And then beyond that, when my mom met my stepdad, you know, he was just a big rock and roll guy. And, like, he was in the Navy, like, in the 80s. So it's, like, all these great rock songs came out when he was in service. And so he had all these CDs. And I, as a kid in Florida, when he'd work from home, sometimes he would play these songs. And so there was always this music in the background. And you know, like naturally, like you know, as you learn later in life, right? Like you psychologically, those things they absorb, especially as a kid. And so I think, in essence, I absorbed all these things. You know what I mean? Like between my grandma and I would go to church and she'd play piano and I'd just watch her and she would sing and play guitar. And then my stepdad, he would just have music blaring in the background, like Guns N' Roses and Rat and Poison and Def Leppard and Motley Crue and like all these like 80s. And then, you know, even before that, Led Zeppelin and the Beatles. And he had a plethora of CDs. So
you started just combing through it all and just thinking, what is going to influence me today? What am I going to love? What were those first bands that you first started loving?
You know, it's funny. I'm really, and to this day, I'm so bad with like, I mean, I'm better now, but I'm so bad with like, I'm not good with like lyrics in a way. And it's contradicting for me because now
I'm the exact same.
Right. You don't think about words as much.
No, it's like melody. Sounds are everything, you know,
bro.
I mean?
100%. I'm so glad. I haven't met many other like musicians that are. It's like that's their thing, right?
And I
it's
love
like,
words, but I'm not good at memorizing or knowing. You know what I mean? It's like, but sounds. I'm drawn to that. You know, more than anything.
It's the feeling, right? It's the feeling. It's how that sound translates to you. So for me, as a kid, I just heard all these sounds.
Right.
You know, like I didn't know like, okay, yeah, that's Def Leppard. Oh no, that's Nirvana. Like for me, it was just like colors and like sounds and like things like that. That's how I translated. And so I didn't gravitate towards one thing until really later in life, really. Like, I started to just love like the 90s, like alternative and grunge scene. Like that's what really spoke to me. And you know, but I know I've got so much appreciation for everything now, you know, and the 50s, the 60s, the 70s. I don't know, yeah. I think really the last 2 to 3 years in particular, I've really like gone back and like just really like honed in on like different musicians from different eras because I never really memorized it. I'm just like, yeah, this is there,
right?
You know, and when I moved out to LA, I wanted to become an actor. And I'm still pursuing that, but I've really gotten to music. Yeah.
Met on one of my shoots for Sight and Sound. We did episode 4 at Aspen Pittman Studio, which is like a really cool studio that you got to like check out and be at. And that's how we had originally met. And it wasn't until, you know, you kind of told me you're like into music and, you know, you do music. But we played a show at the Viper Room. And I was like, oh, my God. It was so great to like run into you. You know, we were doing a show on the same night in the same club. And, you know, I was like, okay, he's serious about this. Like, you're really serious about this. Tell me what was the moment that kind of like made you pivot, made you kind of like really think like, you know, music is where it's at. Like, I want to put a lot of time and energy into this.
I moved to LA 2.5 years ago. And, prior to that, I was actually living in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Oh, wow.
And I'd moved up there for like, I really moved up there to chase a girl, right? It always starts with
that. That's always.
And I mean, we moved together, you know, She wanted to go to Charlotte. You know, for me, it was like, okay, it was almost like an out from Jack's. Like, I wanted to see more. And anyways, it ended up not working out. We ended up separating. I stayed up there, though, and I actually had the time of my life because for the first time, I was just on my own, like completely. You know, I mean, I've lived on my own before and I've had roommates and everything, but now I was like really on my own in a different city. And in those moments, you really find yourself. Like you really like find like who you are. And so when I was in Charlotte, I really had a spiritual journey of like finding out who I was, what I want to do. And eventually I was like, I got to go to LA. And so I did that. And my first roommate out here is a musician. His name is Jasper Henry. And he's a great keyboardist. And so the timeline is like when I moved out here, well, the strike happened in film and TV.
Right.
And SAG. and the DGA, and God forbid, I hope we don't have it again. I've heard talks of it, but that's another story, another subject. But you know, for me, I was like, okay, well, I need to stay creative. And in Charlotte, North Carolina, I had started to do open mics, and it was nerve-wracking to me because I never really played music in front of people before. It was always like in the shower and like, you know, with my ukulele or my guitar at home, and you know, just me. So I knew I wanted to do something in music. I just didn't know when and what and where and why. And so in a way, like the strike happening in LA was kind of like a opening a door for me of like, okay, my roommate was a great keyboardist, and you know, we just started casually doing covers together. And then he was like, you know what, man, like he was already in a band, and he was like, you know what, like let's start a band together. And I was like,
yes.
I was so timid to that, because I mean, I was like, yes, but I was also like, how do you do that? It was just so foreign to me. And eventually we did it, you know. We like went on Facebook and Vamper. Vamper's like Tinder for musicians. I say like that. It's like you can, yeah, it's the whole thing. But yeah, you know, we found a band. We went through like, you know, two or three drummers, two bassists, three guitarists, and you know, we found everyone.
One of the things,
so that's when I was, yeah,
like the city is built for musicians to come and kind of like play together and jam in rehearsal spaces, or you know, like there's studios everywhere. There's home studios now everywhere. There's music shops everywhere. That, coming from Hawaii or even Jacksonville, you had to love, because there's just something like an infrastructure in place for music, like with the clubs, with the studios, with the music shops, with the rehearsal spaces, where you kind of like, you know, kind of put into those situations right away where you're like, oh, this is where we can rehearse. This is where we, like, 'cause I find that, like, you know, I'd been here my whole life, but like when I moved to LA and kind of learned about all these like opportunities, that's why I looked at like every, you know, space was an opportunity to play and explore music. Like, how was that experience for you? Because I remember the first times when I was in a first rehearsal space or a recording studio, and it's like, you just kind of like pinch yourself a little bit like, whoa, this is all here. It's all here. It is all available. Clubs, recording places, rehearsal spaces, it's all here, you know?
It's everywhere. I mean, this city, you know, is a mecca for entertainment and art.
Yes.
And it's crazy because, you know, like even, you know, the place I met you at, like that recording studio was so insane. Like, and the thing I love about LA is you would never know.
Yes.
It's always like some random building on a corner of a street in a, yep, in a part of LA, like you wouldn't necessarily suspect there would be a really nice studio in. And it's like you walk in and it's like, oh my God, like everything is here, and there's a soundboard, and there's mics everywhere, and like, you know, there's so many things. And I and all of it, like for me, was just so scary at first, really, because it's like, I honestly just had such an imposter syndrome, because for me, I'm like, dude, I play, I'm the ukulele guy, you know. I'm like, I'm not, you know, band. That's a different like type of musician for me. And at least it's, you know, that's how I saw it. And then I was able to grow into more of a musician, and I learned a lot, and I really learned a lot from the people around me.
Yeah.
You know, and I think LA is just one of those places where it's like, to your point, you've got so many musicians and so many like opportunity, so much opportunity here. So it kind of forces you into like the level of talent is so, I mean, vast and high. And it's like, it forces you into a thing of like, you get better so quick just because you're playing with so many great musicians, and like they make you better, and then they might pick up something from you, and you just kind of bounce off of each other. And then, like, even when I saw you guys, I was like, you know, I always love to watch other musicians, because I love to see like what do they do and how they do it, and like, you know, how they're delivering a song or going about performing. You know, like I study that, you know. It's like I study, and I think you just learn from others, you know. And for me, it was like just a massive learning curve. And luckily, like my buddy Jasper, he'd been in the scene, so he at least had a foundation that I could go off of for like reaching out to venues and you know, getting shows booked. And we were very lucky. Honestly, the people in the band, you know, were just amazing. And like, I think I was just I was put in a very lucky situation.
Well, that, like, like serendipity and synchronicity. It's all of those things that happen for a reason. You know, it's like you're in these environments for a reason, that it's like it puts you in that place. And it's like, I remember feeling like a tadpole, like in the music environment. And it really is the greatest feeling, because it's like you're full of wonder and you're like, I don't know much, but this is like so overwhelming to see and be around musicians. I love that you were in that session, because it was with Michael Jackson's guitarist and Creedence.
Oh, my God.
What's his name? Clearwater Revival. I'm blanking on his name. I can't believe I'm blanking.
Was that the keyboardist?
Bob Malone. So,
Bob Malone, yeah.
Yeah. It's like, these are guys that, you know, for me, what's cool about you saying that, it's like, I felt like that. And I've been doing music my whole life. Like, around those guys, you know, John Fogerty, that's who I was thinking of. Around those two guys who have this wealth of experience and knowledge and expertise, like playing with those guys makes me feel like I'm in wonder, you know? So I love that you were in there kind of experiencing that too. And that studio is amazing too. And you would drive by it and never know it was in there. Cool about it. So, but I think that's one of the coolest things about music too. It's like, it's not this like, oh, we're over here thing all the time. Like, it is at clubs, but usually the coolest recording studios are like, you won't know that we're in here, and you'll walk by and drive by 1,000 times until you're invited or you get the opportunity to come inside. And then it's like, oh yeah, this is unbelievable. I can't believe like, this is here. So cool. You know, you have that experience. Tell me what it was like when you were recording your first songs. That must have been a huge learning curve when you're actually doing it.
Yeah, it was super different, because like, I think it's one thing to like, you know, for me, I taught myself everything I know. So it's like, it's like one thing to sit there with an instrument in your voice and like, yeah, just play that way. And then you'd start rehearsing in a lockout, you know, in a rehearsal space. And then that's a different experience on its own. Cause it's like, okay, well now we have to, you know, think about the levels that we're playing at. And can you hear yourself? That was a huge learning curve alone for me. And then the recording thing was like, oh my gosh, now you're telling me, and cause I don't use in-ears. And so like now with like a recording, it's like, well, I had the experience of like, okay, well now I have a headset on. Right. And it's like, that was different. Cause it was like, I'm so used to hearing my voice. And then it's like, well, the voice was like in the headphone, you know? And I'm like, oh, I don't know if I'm, it's like having to align those two things and, you know, trying to go where you want to go. And that was different. And I was such a green peak to it, man. And, you know, again, I was just lucky to have some people around me that had done it before. And we recorded like our first songs, and I've recorded most of my music just in a bedroom, and, you know, with a vocal booth in the closet. And, you know, running Logic and, you know, you got mics and different inputs for the instruments, and drums is hard. The drums is different. Drums have always been separate.
Yeah.
And, you know, we recorded our first song without a drummer, really. Actually, we didn't use like tracks from Logic or anything like that. We actually, I forget which site it was, but we got this guy, we paid him, we sent him the track. And his name is Tony Mora. And Tony Mora actually drums on a lot of Taylor Swift tracks.
Oh, that's awesome.
So it was kind of cool. I was like, dude, we got this like sick drummer and sick tracks. And they were like, they were so well done. They barely had to be mixed. But it was learning just all of those things of like to me, it was definitely a little overwhelming. Cause I'm like, for all the technical stuff, I'm not keen to. I'm just like, I don't know. Like, I don't know. I'm very much like, I couldn't tell you the chord that I came up with here on the guitar. I just know it sounds like it's something.
Right.
And And I don't know music theory. Like, I know all your basic open chords, but beyond that, but luckily some people in my band, they knew, they're like, okay, well, it looks like you're playing this here. And it looks like we're in this key. And it looks like, you know, if you guys want to, you know, modulate. And I'm like, I was like, modulate? What are you talking about? What is that? Right. I was like, that sounds like science. Sounds like math to me. I don't know. So I was just, yeah, again, just super fortunate to be in a situation where I had people that were able to guide me.
Yeah, but you know, there's something that's really great when it's so full of wonder like that, you know, that like as you start learning, it's so important to stay in that place too. The more you learn about all these chords and how they work and operate, because it's really easy for somebody to be like, oh yeah, that's just G, C, A minor, D. It's like, yeah, but that's not always going to make you write a song. Whereas like when you're just putting a melody together and like you start hearing, oh, it could go to this. Okay, that's cool. Oh, it could go to this. You're like building blocks. You know, you're using building blocks and you're putting stuff together to make something. And that is what makes it so like full of wonder. So I think, you know, I went to music school and I studied music theory and I had to throw it all out so I could just get back to that place of like, you know what? I want to just make something using building blocks and shapes and sounds and let it kind of like organically get there that way. And then I'll figure out what all the chords are. And I can speak the language, but it's like there's not one part of me that doesn't like always tap into that place of wonder when I'm putting something together, because I think that's where it all comes from. It's like imagination. It has nothing to do with music theory. Imagination, music theory is what somebody wanted to calculate and define because of someone's imagination. They're like, oh, this works because of this. So it's really like a manual, but it's not going to tell you how to use your imagination. And I think that's the most important thing when it comes to art. Like, no one tells you how to use your imagination. You have to use your imagination. So I think it's one of those things that you have to always remember. And the more you learn, I hope you always continue to use your imagination, because that's going to carry you farther, you know?
100%. I think, you know, like I've met a lot of, you know, musicians, and it's like, you know, I realize, yeah, you've got like all sorts of different type of musicians and everyone has their own approach and everything, but I think it's a contrast thing. Somebody who knows all the technical stuff, they might envy somebody who doesn't, because it's like, well, you don't always know what you're doing, but it sounds cool, and it might be breaking a rule. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like there's a couple of songs that I've like showed the band where like, you know, one or two of the guys is like, well, you can't do that chord there because it doesn't make sense. And I'm like, well, like it sounds good to me. You know what I mean? And then it's like I envy their knowledge and I appreciate their knowledge of like knowing that whole world, and vice versa. They're like, because they go to somebody, a musician like me, where it's like, well, I would have never even thought of that. I would have never even considered it, because it's like a no in their head because of their technicality and like,
right,
you know, that, you know.
Yeah, no, I think that's something that's good though. It's like, it's what makes things experimental. And I think, yeah, you have to do that. It's the hard thing is like, especially I remember when I was starting out, I would write songs and I, you know, musicians in my band would like start to shape them. And I'd be like, yeah, I don't want to do it that way because I wrote it like this. And it's written like this because I like it like this. And then you start to realize, you're like, oh, am I not growing because I'm attached to the demo of this song?
Right.
You start learning to be open to experimenting and like, oh, let's try it. And then it's like you start seeing sometimes the ideas grow with suggestions and sometimes the ideas don't grow, get worse. So now I'm so open to it. I'm like, let's try everything. And then if it still doesn't work, I'm like, okay, I already know this works. So it's interesting now. It's like I was first really rigid to experiment. Now I'm so open to experimenting. But at the end of the day, it's like when you want something to sound a certain way, you're just going to have to drive the bus and make it happen that way. So I love that you're in this place, because I feel like an old sage giving you tips on like how to do it, because it's important, because, you know, those things, it's so easy for someone to try and change anything that you do creatively. And it's like, at the end of the day, it's so important to just be yourself and just do what you want to do, be because it's your art at the end of the day, or it's a collaborative art form if you're in a band or something like that. So that's what makes it cool. But let's play something. What do you want to play us first?
There's one of the first things I wrote in LA. It was actually one of the first songs I wrote, like, ever. And it was the Strikes at Midnight song. I sent you a YouTube link.
All right. And it's under Garth Gunderson, or what's the band name?
It's under Vagabond, yeah.
Okay. And it's called Strikes at Midnight?
Strikes at Midnight.
Here's Strikes at Midnight by Vagabond.
Night turns into day and I soaking up all the race brewing. Midnight strikes, I get a little crazed. I told you not to sleepwalk, do a little detour. A mind goes all the time. Do it all again and press rewind. Feels like a bleeding, raging, an empty abyss. What is the point of it all? I told you not to sleepwalk, do a little detour. The mind goes all the time. I'm hyperventilating.
Color filters and it's so cool, the contrast, the vibe. I assume you did it in Joshua Tree, am I right?
Surprisingly, no. It actually was just outside of Lancaster.
What? Really?
Isn't that insane? It looks nearly identical.
Yes. Yeah. Did you know you were going to shoot it there? Like, how did you decide on the location?
To be honest, that was all Will. It was all like we were like, look, we have a day where we can get everyone together. I think there was like definitely some story things I would have loved to have done, but for me it was like the launch of the project really, and so I just wanted something like cool. And like Will was like, you know what, you can never go wrong with a desert shoot, like why not? Like, and it was cool because I think we were able to, especially with the colors, it was kind of able to convey like, you know, different moods and stuff like throughout between the verse and the chorus, and to amplify that. So for me, I was super happy, and Will does insane work, so it's like
he's so blessed. But it's also like you can tell your band has a lot of personality. It's like there's just vibe, you know. It's like your keyboardist is like sitting there guitar. I mean, who's got a guitar in the desert? I don't think I've ever seen that in a music video before.
Yeah, it was just one of those things where I was like, dude, yeah, he was like, he's like the Slash version of guitar.
Of a guitarist. Awesome. Yeah, man. Let me ask you, how long did the shoot take?
You know what? Literally, I think we might have been out there for maybe 3 hours.
That's pretty amazing.
That, people, yeah.
I don't understand like how tiring and exhausting that can be, but to do it in that amount of time is actually kind of guerrilla style. It's awesome.
It was super fast and like, you know, like Will already knew the spot, and you know, I think the biggest challenge was like getting the drum kit out, you know, and
right,
and but that was really it, you know. It was like whatever, you know. And but
you know what's cool? It's like it would have been so funny to show a scene of the band doing the video, and then hearing what you guys were playing, like what it actually sounded like, just out in the desert, unplugged. You know what I mean? Like just as a reel, because. Like, you know, as a musician, I'm looking, I'm like, okay, we got drums, we got a guitar that's not really plugged in, we got a guitar. Like, it's like, that's what's so awesome about it, too. It's like, you know, it sounds like a band because it's a music video, you know? You lost your lights!
I know, my lights! Sitting here in my car in L.A., so L.A.
No, that's all good. I was going to ask you, too, when you wrote the song, tell me what your vision was for, like, the style and the genre of the sound.
You know, I knew because of the guy who I founded the band with, Jasper, he's the guitarist. I knew like we already both knew like we wanted to do rock, like rock and roll. I wrote it more of it was a little bit more somber, you know. I just wrote it on acoustic, and I literally wrote it like at like it was, and it was like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And I had trouble falling asleep, and so like it was, and I've always dealt with that, and, you know, I'm a lot better now, but like as a kid, and you know, as a young adult, I always had trouble with like insomnia and anxiety and stuff like that. So that's like the main theme and the message behind the song. You know, it's just kind of like,
where'd he go? We lost you, Garth.
I'm back in. But it, you know, it was just like, yeah, you know, it was more folky, you know, it was more, you know, just real raw, you know, and then it kind of turned into more of a rock ballad, you know, when like, once we incorporated all the instruments, you know, and it really just kind of took a shape of its own. And it's kind of crazy to me, cause it was like, damn, that's kind of, cause that was really my first experience of like, taking an idea from my head and then like having it translate, you know, onto, it's one thing for me, it was like one thing to record the song, but then to see it in a visual
right
format was like, whoa,
right,
you know, like, whoa. Then the song takes even another form, and you know, like it just ended up kind of on its own, and the guitarist did amazing work, and yeah, it for me, like that is such a you know, like that was the first time I could fully like completed a song, like a you know, like verse, chorus, blah, blah, blah. If you got a bridge section or, a, you know, it's like, that's when I was like, oh shit. Okay, cool. This is like, I can actually songwrite, you know?
You know what I love about songwriting? It's exactly that. It's that you have 2 to 4 minutes to write and build something, and it has to be great. And it's not easy. I think that's what people underestimate. And that's also what I find the most fascinating. It's like, if I watch a movie, I'm sitting there for 100 minutes to 20 minutes where it's like, okay, you've got 2 hours to prove your point or show me your story or take me on a voyage. You don't have that with a song. You barely have that with an album. And it's like, when you, with a song, you have 2, 3, 4 minutes. And it's like, you have to create an emotional experience that reaches people in a short amount of time. And I find that absolutely fantastic and fascinating that we have that privilege to do that. And that's why I admire musicians and songwriters so much, because it's like there's so much that are in these songs, whether it's production, whether it's lyrics, whether it's melody, whether it's all of it, whether it's guitar solos, keytar solos, if you will, you know, whatever. And then you have a music video that usually will accompany it, that it's like telling another story. It's like showing you what the interpretation of the song is. And I also think that is so cool, because you don't see that as much. You know, you don't see music videos as an art form like it was when I grew up. In the 80s, it was the best. 90s, my God, it was like the ultimate. Like, we would rush home from school to watch the new Guns N' Roses video. And it was like, oh my God. I remember when Nirvana's video first came on, and it was like nothing I'd ever seen before. So, and heard. And it's like, you just don't have art doing that. It was the best. It was literally the best. It was the best. But I think it's coming back. That's the good news.
I think it's coming back. And I remember as a kid, I would sit there. I was Vivo TV.
Yeah.
I remember, like, there was like a specific channel on cable, I saw, you know, I would sit there as a kid, and I would just let the thing run for like hours on end, and it was all new artists, it was all like new songs coming out, and like I was like, just video after video, and it's like, just, it was fascinating to me.
Right. I miss that era of art in some ways, because MTV was such a big voice for me just to experience art. You know, it was like, oh my God, the changes that I saw from the 80s to the 90s, and like, you know, how big of a contrast early 80s music videos were to like late 90s. I mean, you had everything. It was colorful. It was dynamic. It was a party. It was like emotional. It was like dark, you know. It's like all these, you know, bands that had, you know, emotional songs. Aerosmith, like when Janie's Got a Gun came out, I remember seeing that video and being like, this is such a crazy image. Pearl Jam with Jeremy coming out with school shootings and stuff, and it's like, man, there was such a clear message and voice that you don't get anymore in the same way. It's taken out of the spotlight of most media, but it's coming back with YouTube. That's what I love about YouTube. It's like YouTube has become the new MTV, and that is what is so great about it, and what I love about it. So I hope you continue making music videos. Let's play something else. What are we playing next?
This one is something I'm working on, and I'm in the process of there's so many other songs I want to show. I just don't have a clear recording of them really yet, but there's one that I sent you. It's just me, a video of me in acoustic. It's called Santa Monica, and that's something I'm really working on and want to get out.
And this is under the same Vagabond, or is this under Garth Gunderson?
This is under me.
Here's Garth Gunderson with Santa Monica.
My name is Garth, so Party Allen, if anybody gets that reference. So I'll play a few originals for you guys and maybe a cover. I actually just came from the bank. Baywatch open casting in LA. So got a little sticker here. So I got some stuff put together for you guys. And that was in Santa Monica. So this first song is ironically called Santa Monica. I'm still working on writing it.
Tune very like radio. Tell me what the influence was.
You know what? I didn't. You said Radiohead?
Yeah.
I didn't. Aside from obviously Creep, everyone knows Creep, but Radio has so many other like beautiful, amazing songs aside from Creep, which is also an amazing song. I didn't do a deep dive into Radiohead until after I wrote this song. And I was like, oh, yeah, like, I love Tom York's, like, falsetto thing that he does. You know, it's just so beautiful and ethereal. But the influence behind this song was actually You know, like I had, when I first got to LA, I had, it always, here I am. It always starts with a girl. I met this girl and, you know, we, literally one night, like we were out and, we're just kind of like, I was kind of, you know, it was one of our first times like going out really. And I was like, I didn't really know what to do. And she was like, let's just go to Santa Monica. And I was like, okay. Like, yeah. And then we literally like, we bought a bottle of, it's terrible, like peach flavored vodka. Like we just kind of sat there and drank and like just had a good time and talked the whole night and everything. And like, I remember the next morning, because we stayed up till like 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. And essentially we both came to a epiphany of like, oh, it's just not going to work out. We're never going to see each other again. Like kind of thing. And to me, in that moment, it was kind of heartbreaking to me. You know, I'm a sensitive guy. So it's like, I didn't write the song until months later. The song had originally formed with different lyrics, but I had the melody. And then I kind of plugged in the lyrics and I was like, okay, this works. I like these lyrics with this melody a lot more. And I feel like it conveys how I was feeling in that moment when it was the epiphany of like, this can't work, you know, for whatever reason. We were both drunk and everything. It was just one of those things, right? It was like one of those life experiences. Even through that night, like there was some just, you know, you're out in Santa Monica at nighttime, you're going to see weird stuff.
Yeah.
Like totally. There was like, even like, you know, down the way, by one of the lifeguard stands, like there was a couple, they were arguing and like, I don't know if it was like a full moon or something, but it was just like, you know, I just took that whole night and I put it into like a song, you know?
Well, we're observers, but we also, we go through life, I think, documenting songs or our music with women. It's like, I think women are one of the things that we are most inspired by. So it's cool that you kind of took that heartbreak and those observations that you're seeing and put it into a song. It's just awesome. This is what music's all about. I want to play your last song. Let's play your last song. What do you play next?
I think we'll do The Lucky Ones because it's out. It's called by Garth Gunderson.
All right, here's The Lucky Ones by Garth Gunderson. Oh, Sam, will you have it? Oh, we have Sweet Stranger.
Oh, Sweet Stranger. Beautiful. Perfect.
Is this under YouTube, Garth Gunderson?
I think it's on. I think I sent it through a video link, I want to say. It might be.
You're the artist?
Yeah.
Here's Sweet Stranger by Garth Gunderson.
Oh, Sweet Stranger. One of my first times playing it, so thank you very much. Did it go well?
Why do you cry when you weep and you whine and you cry all night? Stranger with those dark eyes, and I see your face as you fight away. to and you follow me down the hollow. Why do you cry as I see your face as you fade away? Why do you send me down and you make it loud when you see your to the cross and say me my sweet strangest eyes? Behind the light, behind red lines.
Cool. Garth, where can people find you if they want to find you online?
You can find me on Spotify and Apple Music. If you just type in Garth Gunderson, any Vagabond songs, you can find it as well. They should be interconnected. If you can find me, you can find the other. And you can find me on Instagram at Garth Gunderson Jr. And then my music page is at ggj.music for Instagram as well.
Amazing. I want to bring you back in about 9 or 10 months and see
yes,
what
sir.
And we'll have to play a show soon. And Garth, this is such a pleasure to get to know you and your music and your story. I hope you continues on. Don't give up hope. Don't give up anything other than the bullshit that this city can throw at you. But you know what? If you ever need somebody to help you, I'm just a phone call away or a text. But yeah, man, keep on with all your music and keep pushing forward because it's really awesome, man.
Thank you for having me, Nikki. I appreciate that. Same to Sam and LA Talk Radio. This has been awesome.
Awesome. On behalf of Garth.
LA. Yeah, Hollywood.
Myself, we'll see you guys next week. And in Garth's words, party on. All right.
Excellent.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.